Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show, Saturday, January 9th, 2010. This is our second show of the new year, and things are very hot. Our topic today is this, that President Obama's actions are tantamount to treason. Now, this comes directly, this consideration, from a January 6th statement by Lyndon LaRouche on the case of Obama. It's titled Obama, Tantamount to Treason, in which Mr. LaRouche has pointed out that whatever President Barack Obama may believe he is doing, matters have now reached the point at which his conduct in the matter of so-called health care legislation must be condemned as tantamount to treason. Now, here to discuss this whole situation today, and that is just one of the leading matters tantamount to treason in terms of the health care reform, but to discuss the whole emergency situation in the United States, I'm glad to welcome as guests in the studio Anton Chaykin. Welcome, Tony.
Hi.
Who is the history editor for Executive Intelligence Review. I think I identified myself, but I might not have, Marsha Mary Baker. And our other guest here with me today is Dennis Mason from the LaRouche Political Action Committee, LaRouche Youth Movement. Welcome, Dennis.
Good afternoon.
And Dennis is involved in many projects, especially working with teams on very urgent LPAC TV items and other projects we will hear about. But I want to say right at the start that we thought of this discussion today, January 9th, as part of a two-part series to be continued next week. That's January 16th. Because the next week we will be taking up the context in which it's intolerable to have this situation in Washington that's treasonous, because there is the international physical, economic, anti-nation state breakdown has reached such a stage that we have to have what LaRouche has proposed for some time now, a initiative by the four great powers, Russia, China, India, and the United States, to reestablish, to take emergency measures to reestablish a nation-state serving credit system, needed projects, and move out of this otherwise doomsday situation. And there are tremendous developments that have been unprecedented in recent decades in Russia and China, also in India and elsewhere, even Korea, Japan, about nuclear power, commitments to rail grid building, and other projects. And we will take that up more in depth January 16th. So we have tremendous opportunity in the world, but we are faced with this imperial monetarist activation, the kind of neo-British empire that's behind terrorism, that's behind this the crazed policies taking place in Washington, D.C., and we have to mop up the floor with these people. So we make way for a four great power initiative. One thing I'll say right at the beginning, within a few hours, if not already, you can find Mr. LaRouche's paper on the question and the subject of the Four Great Powers Initiative. It's just been finished, and it will be on our website, on Executive and EIR Online, very shortly, and also Mr. LaRouche's Political Action Committee, LaRouchePAC.com, will have that very shortly. So this is something that's ammunition. It's a fighting document. Read it, use it, and as I say, we'll discuss that more here a week from now. But here we are, only 1 week into January, and I'm glad to say that we're causing a lot of trouble for the evil types in Washington, D.C. I'll point out one thing is that just in the last few days, candidates that have declared for Congress in critical races backing the LaRouche plan are causing a tremendous stir. Rachel Brown going against Barney Frank to unseat him in Boston, Keisha Rogers in Texas, and Summer Justice Shields, who's running to oust Nancy Pelosi. And we can discuss more of that, but these three are going to be in Washington on January 12th. That'll be Tuesday at 1 o'clock at the National Press Club. Those of you who want to be there, plan to. But they are going to discuss, I'm sure, the LaRouche plan, the kind of emergency measures needed, and the strategic things people need to know about the LaRouche's Four Great Powers initiative. But I think they are going to be discussing, surely, that we have a case for impeachment against the president and members of Congress right now. And so that brings us around to our guests so that we can discuss this, because the Executive Intelligence Review is just putting final touches now on a kind of bill of particulars to be considered about impeachment. Because this isn't like a petition campaign or drawing up clauses. This has to be, we have to succeed in stopping what's happening out of the White House and stopping these collaborators in the Congress, who in fact are functioning, we'll get into that, on behalf of rotten policies of this British Empire foreign assault. And just to remind people, and then we'll get into it, that under our constitutional system, the purpose of an impeachment process is not a criminal court case. It isn't, it's really the protection of the nation by removing from high office any federal official who's causing grave injury to the nation and its people and our Constitution. So it's not ex to punish a wrongdoer, but to prevent him or her from doing further irreparable harm to our nation. So at some point, imprisonment or prosecution could come along, but we have a clear and present danger right now of these policies in Washington. So with that, let's begin with the focus that LaRouche had when he put out this January 6th statement, which you can find on the relevant websites. But let's take up the fact that there is the area of conspiracy to commit crimes against humanity that's involved in this so-called healthcare reform that Obama himself announced a year ago March, and is even this morning insisting that it must go through no matter what. Now, Tony Chaykin, you've been active against this. Would you characterize how this is grounds for impeachment, or the nature of what's going as reform is in fact it's traitorous?
Let me say that Barack Obama was first put up as a candidate by this gang of foreign enemies of the United States, George Soros and others, during his brief senatorial career. He was elected to the presidency, however, by the vote of a large number of Americans who expected something different than what they have gotten. And there was a chance that he could have adopted himself to the counsels of LaRouche and the experience and so forth of decent people in the administration. This proved not to be the case, and he has gone with the program of those who first brought him into politics. Take Soros, for example, who a longtime advocate of euthanasia. The Obama health care bill was announced from the beginning as a genocidal program. And the genocide aspect of it is the only thing, surprise, surprise, that has survived all the discussions, all of the negotiations within the Congress. There's no public option. There's no anything else. Everything is geared towards what was announced at the beginning. We're going to cut trillions of dollars out of health care, and we're going to kill people that are too expensive to keep alive. And this is to be put through by a permanent, a set of permanent institutions called the Independent Medicare Advisory Board, or other names. There is more than one of these institutions in the works. And in order to get across that these are people that would be separate from and not to be interfered with by Congress or any elected officials who are going to make the determination who gets covered and how they're going to cut health care for unworthy people to keep alive. They put a clause into this bill, Harry Reid and the president put into this final Senate bill that was put through the Senate, a clause that makes this apparatus, this fascist apparatus, permanent, and it cannot be repealed by future Congresses. Of course, that's absurd, but it's treasonous. This policy of eliminating the unfit, eliminating those who are too costly, those who are deemed unworthy to live, was the policy of the British Empire throughout its existence. And it was specifically the policy that was put in by Adolf Hitler as soon as he became the dictator of Germany in 1933. LaRouche, in the recent months, decided to abort this this attempt at a fascist coup by the people running Obama. And the flagship effort that he made was to put a Hitler mustache on the image of Barack Obama. Some people gasp, you can't do that, that's not fair, it's not legitimate. Let me remind people that in 1933, when Hitler was the dictator of Germany, those who campaigned to try to stop or overthrow him were told, what you're doing is illegitimate. You can't say those things about Adolf Hitler. In September 6, 1933, Secretary of State Cordell Hull, who is a Tory bastard from Tennessee, aligned with London and Wall Street, Secretary Hull sent a memo to the President Roosevelt's secretary, Louis Howe, saying that this administration must not do anything to support efforts that were then in the works to boycott Adolf Hitler's regime. And we have to take care not, quote, to inflame public opinion, unquote, by doing anything that would get people aligned with efforts to overthrow Hitler. This was message coming to Washington from Wall Street and London, from the banks in that make up the London outpost in New York, Wall Street, the Kuhn Loeb Bank, the Rockefeller Banks, Morgan, and so forth. Those institutions are still, along with their London masters, are still the ones that we define as the enemy. They're the ones defining the present program. So what was necessary to do in 1933 to avoid the coming disaster, which unfortunately wasn't avoided, World War II and the Holocaust, we have to do now, and against the same enemy. And that's why it's essential for patriots to back LaRouche on this effort. We've got to get Obama out of the way and get this present government to face the worldwide economic catastrophe, not by killing people on behalf of London and Wall Street, but by a Roosevelt-style economic recovery.
Right. Well, let me ask you, Dennis, you've been involved in bringing out this same fight and aspects of this. I think it was 10 days ago in an LPAC TV production, you put out the relevant information in the form of something like saying either kill this health reform.
Kill the bill or hang.
Mm-hmm. But so would you expand on this? In other words, we're bringing out that these are the stakes, put it that way. If you're either a traitor, you know what I mean? If you push this, you're a traitor.
Well, yeah. I mean, if one thing that I think is extremely important to highlight here is the preamble of the United States Constitution. Because just on its face, if you look at this idea of a perpetuity clause, right, that you can't overturn the law, right, this idea of forming, among others, of forming a more perfect union, continually striving to have a better nation, you're going against that principle just on its face with just that one particular of the bill. But one thing that I had... the point that I made with the editorial statement is that this is not just a policy, but the design of the implementation of this kind of policy comes straight from Britain. You can see that in today's economic catastrophe that's occurring right now, Europe has no potential right now to do anything about the financial collapse. They have no sovereignty. They don't have the ability to generate credit or sign any kind of treaties or get involved in any kind of real physical recovery because of the process that occurred after 1989 with the Maastricht agreements, the implementation of the euro, and now with the Lisbon Treaty, which was implemented the exact same way that they're trying to implement this health bill in the United States, behind closed doors, no public involvement, because you can't, you're not going to convince the American population or any even half reasonable population to take these measures against their own selves. So this has to be done in secrecy. And you know, we had an LPAC intervention at a Harry Reid event just the other day, and what he had said there in response to our organizer was, "Don't worry about transparency; it's a done deal, right?" So here you're looking at, I would also add that this is a push that's not just coming from Harry Reid himself; it's not just coming from the Senate or elements of the House of Representatives, but this was rammed through every single meeting that they had on the bill was attended by Rahm Emanuel as a representative from the White House. And as Tony brought up earlier, the one thing that they did not bend on was this death panel, this IMAB. We will choose who's worthy of living and not. But so yeah, these things are completely, you know, not just unconstitutional and immoral, but the problem is that while we're busy fighting this off, the entire financial system is about to completely disintegrate. It's disintegrating out from underneath us. And meanwhile, if you look at what's happening around the Pacific Ocean, if you look at what's happening with India, China, and Russia in cooperation with other nations, they're taking the lead on dealing with the imminent collapse of this monetarist system, of the empire. And it behooves us to get whatever stopping us from getting involved in that internationally out of the way. And at that point, that's the presidency as it's being run right now by Barack Obama.
Right. Now, the two of you have had a question from an email from Gerald I'll throw in here because it just fills out the picture you both have described of the machine that's forcing this evil or preventing the United States from going with what's in the interests of the world and the U.S. Namely, you have a kind of transatlantic gang of so-called behavioralist economists. Our EIR news service and EIR Online's been exposing this, and LaRouche Political Action Committee's had some hilarious exposures of these people. Behavioral psychoeconomist, Gerald says. So they've been pulling the strings. And this is all part of what Dennis, you just said. The preamble talks about, or bespeaks of, continued improvement of conditions of mankind. But the behavioralists say, no, adjust to collapse and we'll coerce you, if not nudge you into it. So do you want to say more about this, Tony?
Yeah, let's look at the policies that we're getting from Obama. I could say four central foci of this administration. War, expanding war in West Asia, with now the terrorism, counterterrorism practiced against the population of the United States, a purely British operation. The British the British recruited that guy. Was on the Detroit plane, for example, in London to Al Qaeda, and then they refused to let him back in England, and Obama lies about the whole origin of this case. We're supposed to have our bodies groped by his people. The second agenda: global warming. That's driving people completely furious. The world is gripped in a death grip of a freeze. And these jokers are saying we have to turn off the heaters. The bailouts, $20 trillion to the same Nazi bankers that backed Hitler And the British directly got this money, British banks. And they are right now in a frenzy to rev up this speculation again. The green agenda of global warming and elsewhere, and the health, this health bill, where those people who are going to be gathered into some kind of coverage, who are not now covered, are going to be killed by the government. Okay, so that's the agenda. Who's putting this across? Just name three people. Larry Summers, Peter Orszag, and Cass Sunstein. Summers, the lead economic advisor, a real pig who was part of the looting of Russia, and who with his cronies put together a multi-billion-dollar slush fund, looting Russia, that pays for these economists. We've covered that. Peter Orszag, who goes back and forth to London to check with his masters at the London School of Economics on how to get the Americans to adjust by behavioral tricks to the collapse of the economy. And Cass Sunstein, who Gerald himself has pointed out, wrote a book recently on the Constitution of the United States.
Is that the one called Partial Constitution? That was 1993,
The book is about how the Constitution is really outmoded. It's not useful. He has been appointed. He's very close to Barack Obama himself at the University of Chicago, and he has been appointed to make to draw up the regulations for the agencies within the Obama administration. So this is a purely British group of superficial, corrupt individuals fronting for the old London Wall Street combination. That's all it is.
Well, what
I would add to that too, that, you know, these guys, yeah, they're the jerks that are surrounding the president right now and determining the policy. But these guys are, I would say, like expressions of the monetarist tradition, the tradition of Jeremy Bentham, the tradition of Adam Smith, right? Where the idea of the human being, the human soul, is not that we are creative and that we can figure out new principles in the universe, but essentially you have ideas like the hedonistic calculus, avoid pain, seek pleasure. And so the policies, really logically follow from that kind of outlook on mankind. If you look at there's this report out of the London School of Economics written by, I think, Adam Oliver, where they were setting up a constitution for their health system there. And one thing that they mentioned in terms of behaviorism is they said, well, you have to be something along the lines of, you have to be careful with what you introduce as a constitution, because you may get entrenched ideas into your population. The U.S. Constitution is a good example of how you have entrenched ideas, and that should actually be avoided, right? Which is pretty darn anti everything that the United States is actually built to do, which, you know, goes back to this idea of improving the life and livelihood of our citizenry generation by generation through new cultural discoveries and applications of discovery of principle. That's what... the behaviorists are operating against that standpoint, and that's what's generating a lot of this policy that's coming out of the White House.
Can I respond to that? If you think about what the White House should be doing in this emergency with the utter collapse of the physical economy, this terrible speculation, and the spread of war, go back to the two instances where the country was faced with a threat to survival that was responded to by President Abraham Lincoln and President Franklin Roosevelt. They approached this by throwing open to the public a vision of a future world that was completely different than what they had been experiencing, a world in which new inventions, new discoveries, new powers of industry would then be spread around the world, around mankind. And in a short space of time, after Lincoln, with his policies, we developed the powerful industries, including completely new phenomena like public electricity, and with and spread that to countries in Asia and Russia and Europe, and we were at this for the whole world. The same thing with Franklin Roosevelt, who attacked the Depression by going after vast infrastructure projects, and also cooperating with other countries that had been otherwise subject to imperialism, and saying, we want to cooperate with you to spread this growth and this prosperity after we've licked Hitler. Mm-hmm. No empires, but massive construction of a new human an environment for human beings among the Arabs, among the South Americans, among the Asians, and a completely a world with nuclear power and things like this. So this is what should be in the White House, and we must force that in right now. We have a chance to bring a breath of excitement and possibilities to sweep out this enemy operation that's in there now. Otherwise, we won't survive.
Yeah, you can see that right now with what's happening out of the four powers. What there was a conference call earlier in the day with Mr. LaRouche, and one thing that he had pointed out was that what passes for popular opinion in the transatlantic community is not in coherence with what the rest of the world is thinking. I mean, if you look at all the cooperation, well, on the one hand, while you have, you know, the what happened at the Copenhagen conference and all this push for global warming stuff, which is obviously, I mean, that's totally ridiculous at this point. But you counterpose that idea to what's actually occurring in the Pacific area with China and Russia and India getting in collaborative projects on massive nuclear projects, rail, this kind of thing, and bringing in other countries that by themselves wouldn't be able to stand up against the British Empire, countries such as Korea, Japan, UAE, these kinds of things. And that's what's already in motion in reality in the world that we really have to get involved with. If we don't do that, then we're going to see the collapse of the United States in our lifetime.
And these China and India stopped the global warming bullshit at Copenhagen.
Yeah, they showed with just two of the four powers that
defended us by doing that.
Yeah, and were able to stand up to the empire and tell them what to do with themselves.
Right. Well, Tony, when you were saying earlier on, listing these kinds of conspiracy to commit crimes, and you see the White House is following through on warfare, following through on reform healthcare Hitler style, and then this crazy reduce carbon emissions, you know what I mean, kill people off by this green agenda. In some ways, this is exactly what Tony Blair did. These are the very same things. He's doing it now. He did it then. And I think Mr. LaRouche, in his new paper on the four-power initiative, says in some ways Obama is a caricature of Tony Blair. I mean, the differences aren't so important. They're exactly the same. And with that in mind, if you think of bills of counts of impeachment, put it that way, that the conspiracy to commit the U.S. to an international genocide policy is what's at stake here. Tony Blair is an operative for that, but that's what Obama's doing. And
you mean global warming?
Exactly.
You mean war?
Exactly.
You mean IMF conditionalities?
So you've often on this program over the last year, Tony, maybe you want to restate that in fact this adds up to it's the pedigree of this genocide policy goes back decades. It is British, and if you want to bring out some of that right now, while impeachment's on the agenda.
All right. So when the Nazis tried to do what Obama's doing right now, which is euthanasia, in 1933, there was reaction against it by religious groups in Germany, saying you can't just kill off the elderly to save money. And so it was put into a hold to a certain extent until the war started in 1939. although at the time Cordell Hull did his statements, they had already started sterilizing people, and they had announced their campaign. It was right a month after that Cordell Hull thing. They had announced the campaign for euthanasia in October 33. Mm-hmm. But to try to get this going again in Nazi Germany, the British set up in December 35 a movement called the Voluntary Euthanasia Society. That movement is still in operation. It's in operation in the United States and in Britain, and elsewhere has spread from there. But this is the British right to die and right to murder or organization that tried to bolster their puppet, the guy who was originally a puppet of theirs, Hitler. And this, in the period after World War II, this was brought back into the United States, even though it was everything associated with Hitler was discredited, particularly by the Rockefeller family. Senator J. Rockefeller's grandfather, John D. Rockefeller II, had made a world tour with John Foster Dulles to see in the 50s to see about how to cut back on the population of non-white people, which he said was a threat to the world. He set up a group called the Population Council, merged into it the existing American Eugenics Society, and set up the Hastings Center, whose founder, Daniel Callahan, was a Rockefeller family employee. Callahan and Hastings are still there. They are defining the policy of euthanasia for the Obama administration, for their fellow, for example, Ezekiel Emanuel and so forth. So this is a continuing movement. It has always been centered in England. It's always been in London. Galton invented eugenics, and that's where this movement has always resided. So now Jay Rockefeller, the senator from West Virginia, has fought for the permanent set of experts to be part of the apparatus that will implement genocide within the United States. This independent Medicare advisory board and other such things that he has put into this bill, it will make the decisions about cutting care, and the Congress is not supposed to interfere with that according to this law. So this is it's almost unbelievable that somebody with that background, the grandson of the guy who financed, for example, the eugenics and race movement inside Germany, inside Nazi Germany, his grandfather did that, financed the Hitler eugenics program to start Hitler off. And the grandson is now doing that here in the United States Congress today. I mean, how more obscene can you get than that?
Right. And the exact, it's not, as you say, it's not just parallels, it's a direct lineage. And the
we're
same
still
way
fighting World War II. If we finish these guys off, then we have a chance to survive. Who needs to fight the same damn war all over again?
And you know, you
getting
think,
sick of it.
You mentioned Jay Rockefeller, and the thing that's immediately to hand, the IMAD, as it's called. You know what I mean? The death panel.
That's a good one, IMAD.
Yeah, right.
Dr. Strangelove.
That's right. And it's directly. In 1999, Britain set up its death panel under Tony Blair.
NICE.
National Institute for Health and Clinical Excellence. So the thing is just such a rubber stamp from the British Empire pedigree that you just mentioned. Going back to, you can pick and choose where, but it's Malthusian. There's only room for so many people, and we're going to decide who starves or who we kill off, and that's the end. So, well, let me ask you, Dennis, you're working with different teams to bring out we have a national public revolt against it. So let's just say that yet again, the mass strike process, the meeting you mentioned, there was a town hall meeting that Senator Harry Reid tried to have in secret, practically in Nevada, and our networks blew the lid off it, so we're throwing the spotlight on all of this, and the rats are starting to scurry. But what do you think when you, for the task of constantly making clear, conveying ideas, educating the mass drag process, what are you working on, or what's being worked on, or what do you think it's important to think about to bring out?
Well, I think that as people will see in this most recent document by Mr. LaRouche, one thing that he brings up is this question of the past experience being fixed, being finite. You know, he constantly brings up this idea from Einstein of a finite but unbounded universe. And so when you're operating simply from sense experience, well, my experience tells me this. My experience.
Personal experience.
Yeah, tells me that and so on. You know, that's going to represent a real problem if you're going to try and do something that's future-oriented. The reason I bring that up is because largely, like, you know, when Tony brought up a little bit earlier the importance of the mustache on Obama and now on Harry Reid, that's actually one, because people say, yeah, the healthcare bill is bad and this and that, but why the mustache? Why this? Why, you know, isn't that going a little too far? So one problem that we're confronted with generally is a depth of, not just a depth of knowledge, but a depth of a way to look at what's going on. Because, you know, as Tony's referencing here, you know, a lot of people will say, well, yeah, you have the death board, but, or, well, you know, the Independent Medical Advisory Board, but, you know, isn't, you know, old people, you know, isn't it expensive and this kind of thing. But what a lot of people don't realize is that what started off in Hitler's Germany as just culling the ostensibly unfit to live turned into just throwing people into the gas chambers and killing people off wholesale. That once you open the door, you take the perpetuity clause, once you open the door to that kind of thing, then where does it lead? It leads to the destruction of the country. It leads to the destruction of the population. So I think it's interesting in this new publication by Mr. LaRouche, what he talks about with, instead of your sense experience, your personal experience, and being in that fixed mindset, that the way that you're going to look at the world around us in order to get us out of this mess is by thinking about a future orientation. Where do we need to be as a society 20, 50 years from now, right? And then putting in the stage of your imagination, look ahead, like put yourself on Mars or on an industrial city on the moon. And then think about, okay, if I'm standing there in my imagination, standing there, there's these work going on. We're building ships for our adventures off into Mars. What did it take to get us there from where we are sitting today? And that is the determinant of your policy, of your national policy. And not just that, but the outlook of your culture. Because one of the problems that we're running into, why people question the mustache, why people, you know, look away and turn aside on these questions of the global warming or on these questions of the Independent Medicare Advisory Board, these kinds of things, isn't genocide a little bit too rough, is our culture right now has degenerated to the point to where we're having difficulty even recognizing that our current policy and our way of thinking is destroying our society. We don't have a productive outlook. We don't have a culture that's congruent with the physical universe in which we find ourselves. And so these things, by looking forward in terms of a programmatic approach, like, for example, the LaRouche plan, that is been the focus of our operations over at LPAC. We have these three congressional candidates, and those candidacies are really, are to be like the benchmark of sorts, because you have a lot of people that are fed up, right? You have a lot of people that are like, well, what should we do, and this kind of thing. And so what we're moving to do is, by putting forward in a more elaborated way on the LaRouche Pack website with the video production, in terms of policy with these congressional campaigns, is to really lead the way on how it is that we actually get out of this crisis, right?
Let me say that without LaRouche, you're facing a complete disaster. That he's posing and working in these other countries as well, the alliance of the United States with Russia, China, and India to get the economy moving in the direction of mankind's future. The alternative to that, you can see in, for example, what is put forward by Peter Peterson, this Wall Street speculator, who's paid for a commission to demand, and Obama spouts this stuff all the time, to demand a permanent bureaucracy of experts that would eliminate Social Security, medical care, and other things that keep people alive. And they say, as Obama says, that what is causing the deficit and debts of the society is
people.
Keeping those people alive with Social Security and medical
people.
Care. That there's no other cause for it. That is so stupid and so shallow that you have to say, well, why would ordinary people, and many ordinary people do go along with that. You can see them saying, yeah, there's got to be something causing this. And if people don't have the guts to talk about Wall Street or talk about speculation or to remember what factories and farms were or and so forth, then you might as well just submit to this kind of this is shallow fascism. That is the alternative. Either you submit to that, which is under active consideration, including a bill in Congress that Obama is promoting. I think it's Conrad and who's the other guy? There's some other senator that's pushing this for the Peterson commission. That's the alternative.
Well, it's the same thing you already raised before, or if you think of it in terms of counts or a bill of particulars for impeachment, this whole thing that's going on that you can call a conspiracy to violate the separation of power provisions of the U.S. Constitution, where the White House is just moving ahead. Coherent with that is this assertion that you should remove decisions from politics.
Right.
You should have only expert commissions. You should have only the British East India Company and Thomas Malthus decide who gets to live and who gets to die. I mean, it is as bald as we're just describing. With that, let me just put in a plug right here. One thing I want people to do who are listening today or hearing this in archive at any time or on the, some people listen by telephone message line, it's really time to subscribe to the EIR online. Here you have the paper that Dennis has just been discussing by LaRouche, the new paper on the question before us on the subject of the Four Great Powers Initiative. And that may be available in the LaRouche Political Action Committee very shortly. But EIR Online has the backup material all the time, every week. It has this bill of particulars right now on the impeachment, on this, the kind of formulations, fighting formulations, and in many ways the dossiers each week. And a few thousand people do subscribe, but now if you have a subscription, extend it. If you don't have one, get one, or buy it for your enemies and friends. Whatever you have to do, these are the resources that are going to count. And we're going to redouble all the effort to dish this or to pass the ammunition. But I just want to stress that it couldn't be more obvious in this case. Now, I've given my colleagues a final couple minutes. There may be a point or two that they want to raise, either about the what LaRouche himself has said, that we're at the stage where what the actions of President Obama are tantamount to treason, and that's what the millions of people should be thinking about that are fed up. But I know that in the cultural side that Dennis and Tony were just discussing about, why should the population, why should people in the United States, why should we go along with any of this crap? It's so bad that we've also, we need to regain a sense that it's moral, it's a good thing, it's a joyful thing to prosper thy neighbor, other countries, not just your family, not just yourself, not just your hometown. And this, too, is something, I suppose you might, I think Mr. LaRouche has been stressing this, it's in his paper. Would you say, Dennis? Mm.
Yeah, I mean, either it's been said by several great Americans, either we'll hang together or we'll hang separately, right? And at this point, I think that if the United States, if we don't turn around what's happening with this administration, if we don't get on board with the bankruptcy reorganization, if we don't get on board with cooperating, collaborating with these the other three of the big four powers, of which we are a necessary part, then this country and much of the world besides is gone. You can already see some of these financial flows and whatnot, the way the British do their one method of British attack against Russia and China, that if we don't band together as the greater balance of the population and the greater balance of the political power in the world against this empire, then they're just going to pick us off one by one. And they're doing a good job of it using the Barack Obama administration here in the United States. And any patriot, at this point, it doesn't matter parties, Republican, Democrat, Independent. The question is really, are you an American patriot? Do you want to see the Republic continue? Are you interested in having the Constitution and our great Republic available for your children's generation, your grandchildren's generation? And that's what needs to be in perpetuity, right, is the Republic.
Let me get to the central point of the treason that is virtually being put on us by this administration, by the president. The healthcare atrocity proposes to limit and reduce the medical care available to categories of people. It is not just the long-time will of various fascists that have crafted this thing. That's the problem. The problem is that we currently suffer under a predatory financial system, global financial system, globalism, that is in collapse. And that system, the people who are running that system, the financiers, the ones with the derivatives, the ones with the arms into looting Africa and these other countries and so forth, those people want blood fast. They want structures to keep that blood going to them. That's the problem. Unless you say that system is over, we're going to not pay off those derivatives. They're going in the deep freeze. We're putting the banking system through our reorganization top down by the federal government, and we're encouraging the rest of the world to do the same in cooperation with us. That's the new system. Otherwise, we die. It's as simple as that. The predatory system in collapse has as its spokesman an idiot who is now the president of the United States, and who is a stooge for that system centered in London, the largest financial center of the present world. That has to end, period.
Well, it looks like we've ended the show on that note, and that's the note we're gonna make that predatory system end. It is collapsing, but you're right. We can get the stooge out and his fellow stooges.
If you want to go till 10 after, it's not a problem.
We just heard from our production center here. We had to start on a delayed basis so we could continue to talk. So we have another 9 minutes. Well, Dennis, I'm just saying, you mentioned about being on a conference call with Mr. LaRouche. He's keeping busy all over the world. Mm-hmm. But he was saying about create a juggernaut. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly for the purpose of doing just what Tony said, this globalist system. It's been called globalism because they couldn't say we're going to have a fascist world system 25 years ago. We're just going to have a one world market, they called it. I can think of a few other euphemisms. But what you mentioned about the candidacies, this is obviously aren't just three disparate candidacies, in even if it's against Nancy Pelosi in California and one in Texas and one in Boston against Barney Frank. But if you say again, this is part of giving focus and to the mass strike movement already underway.
Yeah, I think that's extremely important right now, because you do have people that are suffering right now. You have the unemployment rolls are running out. People who never thought that they would be foreclosed on are being foreclosed on. People aren't just losing jobs. They're losing entire lines of work. Their entire field of expertise is disintegrating along with this financial system. And so that is a good environment under which you can have social catastrophe. Lynn has mentioned, Mr. LaRouche has mentioned before, this idea of the French Revolution, where you could have a Jacobin terror kind of situation on the hands. And given the degeneration of our culture since we kicked Hitler's ass earlier on in you know, the World War II, since that point, we've degenerated so far in our culture that, you know, that's a real possibility. So, but at the same time, though, at the root of the American people is a completely different culture. And you can see that in the conference call earlier, Mr. LaRouche had said there's nothing happening in Europe at all. Politically, it's totally dead. They're crushed, not just from the standpoint of policy to political leaders not being able to legally do anything, but with this oligarchical system, those who would be citizens are thinking like subjects, like serfs and whatnot. Where here in the United States, underneath it all, even with the corrosion of our culture, the destruction of our physical economy, at the root, you have, you know, what has been termed before a sleeping giant, where if under the circumstances where there's nothing else worth fighting for, if people have a sense of what it is that we can accomplish, they'll do it. Because in the United States, you have a can-do attitude, you know, with Abraham Lincoln, the idea is we're going to build a railroad. We're going to do it. With Roosevelt, the idea is we're going to have the biggest production capability that we've ever seen in this country. And we did it with the TVA. We did it. And so I think that sort of principle of the American citizen is really what we're out to, not just revive, but direct. Because, you know, without that, then you know, I think we'll have problems politically.
I could mention that I recently went to Hyde Park, the home of Franklin Roosevelt, and did some research in their library there. But when you go into Roosevelt's house, in the vestibule, coming right in the door, this is the house that he lived in all his life. You see illustrations of naval power, ships and commanders and battles. And you say, well, okay, he's a naval person. He's interested in naval history. But then you go up and look at it, and it's unbelievably specific. It's all anti-British.
Oh,
there's no modern battleships there. He lived in this house all his life. From, you know, 1880s, when he was born, till he died in 1945. And on the walls of his...
Yes, John Paul Jones.
Yeah, you have there's only two wars represented, the American Revolution and the War of 1812, both against the British, and
there are a bunch of anti-British cartoons. And we were told that when King George came to visit during our temporary alliance to fight Hitler, Franklin Roosevelt's not-so-nice mother said, we better take these cartoons down. And Franklin said, no, we're not. We're not going to take them down. So the king looked at these cartoons when he came in the door, and he said, oh, well, you have some that I haven't seen. But the sense of power of the United States when it has been doing what LaRouche is talking about now for the future, when it has been in the mode of invention, discovery, and outreach to help the other countries do these things, has always been, and that's when we grew. We never had any growth otherwise. Otherwise, we were in control of slave owners and scoundrels.
Yeah, now, many of you listening know, Tony's written a book on treason. You can say about that, just describing just some of the periods in which this was an issue.
So, the impulse to national power that we have to regain. For example, the power to go back to the moon and Mars. We don't have that power right now. We're going to have to rebuild a whole set of industries and sciences that were taken down by these traitors. But that sense of power and the practical expression of it is associated with this idea of doing good in the world. It's always been associated with it. It's never based on a narrow conception of chauvinism or hostility to some other part of the world. We're not even hostile to England, we're hostile to the empire. The problem is American self-conception, and it was both, I would just reiterate again, Lincoln and FDR, both of them, as LaRouche is doing, is calling the people to a new national identity that reaffirms what the Constitution was about. It's a totally unique document in world history, that it's based on this idea of progress. And there's no other route to national power except that exalted and very idealistic conception of man.
Yes, speaking of the what you had touched on earlier about the view of what could be done after, if you're forced to go to war, as in World War I, World War II, what you can do afterwards, the nuclear question right after the Second World War came up very directly. Detroit Edison was sending its executives to Egypt, to Iran. They had a tabletop to scale model of a nuclear civilian power plant. And Enrico Fermi had worked with Detroit Edison. So this was on the agenda. It was very concrete, much of which then has gone, not because of age, but has gone out of the political memory. So in a way, you're talking about restoring the political memory through the LPAC TV, through the initiatives, as well as through Tony's and others' history. And from that point of view, one of your projects, right, is the way you could, you don't have to wait around forever and talk about green jobs or something. You could have the Civilian Conservation Corps type approach to the immediate emergency, right?
Oh yeah, I mean that's something. There are lots and lots of projects already on the books that simply lack funding. I mean, if you look across the United States and look at the state of our basic economic infrastructure, we could employ everybody quickly. But the problem is the monetary system. Under the current conception, if there's a fixed amount of money, unless it has to do with the bailout, that, you know, you have to balance the budget and that's it and that's all. But, you know, with these cases that Tony keeps bringing up with Abraham Lincoln and with FDR, they had to deal with the financial system in order to generate credit to do the projects that were necessary then. That's the only thing that's stopping us from doing these things now. And when you get that, that's where you're going to have a real progression in the culture, I think. You know, when people have a sense that they're contributing to society in a lasting way, that they're actually contributing to future generations with what they're doing today. That's something that I know that my generation, we need. We lack this. And that's something that, that can be, you know, started almost immediately.
Well, I guess this does end the time, even the extended time. It is January 9th, 2010. And this has been the LaRouche Show. This is Marcia Mary Baker, and I'm thanking Dennis Mason and Anton Chaitkin for this discussion. And we're ending on a note where you can see not to restore and to act upon the principle of progress and to do these other things we're now seeing by President Obama and cohorts. This is treasonous, and we're going to stop it. We'll continue the discussion next week, January 16th, including some updates from Mike Millington and others on some of these unprecedented initiatives for development projects in Eurasia. So thank you very much, and this is the end of the LaRouche Show. Thank you.